Call the meeting to order.
First item of business, we need to approve the minutes dated February 22nd. Will someone like to move the minutes? Representative Ward.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ward moves the minutes for February 22nd. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Morrow, you have some interesting news. Would you like to share it, please?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the moment to just... I handed out a blurb here from a constituent of mine, a Minnesota farmer who has a book out called Eco-Commerce 101. And Tim Gasecki has been working on ways to find, to move away from government-based solutions affecting ag to more market-based solutions. And I told Mr. Gasecki that I would let folks know about his book on this committee. So thank you very much for the indulgence of letting me pass this out. I appreciate it, Mr. Chair.
So, well, thank you for keeping us updated as well and the information. It's helpful. Thank you. At this moment, members, like we had talked about, we'll ask the department to move forward, if you would, please. We're going to be reviewing, obviously, the governor released his budget. We're going to be reviewing that over the next 2 days. So we have the famous commissioner before us.
Infamous.
Yeah. So please, if you'd like to state your name and who you represent for the record, and please proceed if you would. Welcome, Commissioner.
I'll be happy to do so, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dave Fredrickson, the Commissioner of Agriculture, and it's indeed a great pleasure to be here in front of your committee. Thank you very much for the invitation. I hope you've recovered from your jet lag.
You know what, Commissioner? I'm feeling it today. Yesterday,
really?
I felt great, but today I feel a little bit of a jet lag here.
Perchance you might doze off, Representative Anderson will give you the nudge. My grandmother used to do that to my grandfather, and he would get the jab in the ribs, and he would say, "Goodness sakes, can a man think with his eyes closed?"
That's perfect.
From time to time.
Commissioner, that's what I'll be doing, thinking
right,
with my eyes closed.
With their eyes closed. Well, again, Mr. Chairman and members, I'm pleased to be here on behalf of the department. We have the governor's budget proposal in front of us, and I believe that you should have the handouts also. What I'm going to do just is to start us off introducing two new assistant commissioners that I've appointed to serve in the department, Matt Wollman. Matt, if you want to stand. Matt comes to us from Congressman Waltz's office. I've raided Congressman Waltz's ag outreach and policy worker. And the next person is Charlie Poster. I raided Senator Franken's office of his outreach worker. And so if you count me out of Senator Klobuchar's office, and if anyone's looking for work, there's three positions open.
I'm awful worried, Commissioner, that out in Washington, D.C., it's just going to collapse now. We have nobody
right
representing
here.
Us during agriculture. We have all the good people right here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let me just acknowledge Deputy Commissioner Jim Borboom. Jim, as you know, has been around the department for many, many years, serving as Deputy Commissioner over the past 3 years. So we also have division heads here today to assist us as we walk through this budget. And I know that we've also had a chance to preview it with you, Mr. Chairman, and hopefully are ready to go with the format that we proposed.
Yes.
Let me just start with this little handout, the Venn diagram, if you will. The mission of the department is to focus on three areas: food safety, the ag economy, and environmental protection. And the Minnesota Department of Ag, of course, is right square in the middle of those. We certainly try to promote the ag economy with expanding global trade. I know that the governor has suggested a trade mission to China sometime in the middle of summer, and we're looking forward to doing that. I've worked with Chairman Hamilton and also Chairman Magnus in the Senate Ag Committee to give us some ideas, and hopefully have the two of you join the governor as he moves ahead with the trade mission. Flipping over to the inside, and our approach here today is basically to let you know who we are and what we do, how the money comes in and how the money goes out. And if you look at the top diagram, I think it clearly points out the expenditures by program. The agency service and assistance, 12%. Protection services, 55%. Ag marketing and development, 22%. And value-added products, 11%, which includes the ethanol program payments. Expenditures by fund, dropping down to the bottom chart, you'll see that 43% comes from other funds, which would be another name for fees. Federal funds at this point amount to approximately 15%, and 42% of our total budget comes from general fund. What I'd like to do now is to begin moving us through the process. It's fairly lengthy, Mr. Chairman, but hopefully it'll be a good opportunity for everyone to get a good picture of what the department is all about, how it spends its money. So I'd like to ask Greta Gauthier, who is our legislative staff here in the Capitol, to pick it up from there.
All right.
Greta?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Commissioner.
Welcome.
If I could, I'd like to direct you to the second page of our handout. And at this point, I'm going to ask Steve Ernest, who is our financial director, to come up. What this page is a quick summary of the governor's recommendations by funding source. So the first box there, you'll see those items in blue. That is money from the Clean Water Fund, which is the fund financed by the Clean Water Land and Legacy Amendment approved by the voters in 2008, that sales tax increase. Then the general fund items. And then at the bottom is our agriculture fund changes. The agriculture fund are basically our fees for dairy, feed, seed. We have several different categories of feeds, and those are fees, and those are paid in. And then we use those monies directly back to assist those producers in that industry. With that, I'll turn it over, and we'd like to go through these, and then we can go page by page, if you would like, through the longer documentation in the governor's budget.
Yes, I'd like that approach. We had talked about that earlier, and I think some of the members asked for is a 35,000-foot overview, then we can zero down after that.
So this first page is 35,000 feet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Steve Ernest, thank you, Finance and Budget Director with the Department of Agriculture. So as Ms. Gauthier said, the first section here, the Clean Water Fund, these are the constitutionally dedicated tax revenues for these purposes. This money is appropriated on a biennial basis, just one at a time. So you see the tails on the right-hand side have zeros in them. However, these numbers are similar to the numbers that were appropriated to us for the 10-11 biennium, and then they were reviewed by the interagency group that looks at all the purposes for this money and suggests which agency should get how much money for the different purposes. Our four purposes here are similar to the four purposes we had in the previous biennium. The first one is the Best Management Practices, Ag Best Management Practices Loan Program. So this money goes into a revolving fund and combines with other money that we get through the Public Facilities Authority. We keep it separate, but it's all for the same program, to provide loans for water quality practices through the local units of government, specifically focusing on their local TMDL, total maximum daily load plans that they developed for each individual location. And as I said, this money revolves, and there's a very large backlog of projects out there to be done. The Clean Water Drinking Protection Program is, again, a continuation, and this one focuses especially on nitrates and the effects of the ag chemicals in the groundwater. And as Ms. Gauthier said, each one of these has its own page in the book, so we'll get to the more specifics when we get there. Pesticide monitoring and assessment, this is especially focuses on getting some equipment out there to make sure we know what the quantities of pesticides. And then the clean water research evaluation and assistance, I would just mention that this one includes the Discovery Farms program that some people are interested in, and we'll get into more details when we get to the page.
Okay.
So $15.15 million for this biennial budget out of this fund. Then the general fund, we have four items here. The first one is the basically what we have always called the ethanol program. The program as it's designed is for our chapter 41A, which has the value-added programs more broadly, but our first call on the money has been the ethanol program. What you see here are the changes, because there's a $14.7 million base in this program. And so what this budget does is just shift a little extra to the first year from the second year in order to pay off all the remaining deficiency amounts that we've calculated for plants that produced ethanol, but because of appropriation restrictions, we weren't able to pay them the full 20 cents per gallon that the statute called for in the years that they were in the program. And then in the second year, we take a 10% cut to the program overall and bring it down to a lower level in the second year, but then equalize that cut. If you look at the tails, you see the $8.9 million is the same in the both bienniums. We just backload the cut in the first biennium so that we can just be done with the deficiencies. Second item.
Just a minute, Mr. Chairman, if I may just clarify that point and reiterate what the governor's recommendation is that those ethanol payments, deficiency payments, be completely finished up in the first year of the biennium. Pay them off. It's an obligation the state has had to these people, and they have been, they have taken reductions, they've taken delays, and the governor's feeling is let's pay this off, be good on our commitment, and then be done with that and be able to look forward.
Okay. Well, thank you for the clarification. We do have a question to this. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Gauthier, Ms. Ernst. The deficiency payment, would that be allocated quarterly through the first year of the biennium, or would that be a lump sum payment at some point during the first year of the biennium?
Mr. Ernest, would you like to take that?
Mr. Chairman, the directions are basically just to pay it, so unless you give us language to put it out quarterly, we would pay it as soon as we have the money available.
Okay, thank you. Please proceed.
The second item is our agency operating reductions for our general fund operations. So this focuses on the operations that are funded by the general fund and is a 5% increase, decrease.
5% cut.
A large portion of this comes from the salary savings through the early retirement incentive program that we've done. So there are some positions, four or five positions, that are just not getting filled, and then other positions that will be filled at lower levels. The third change is a fee increase to a fee that doesn't go to our dedicated account. It goes to the general fund. Retail food handler fees bring in about $3 million a year for the general fund. And this increase is a 15% across the board increase in order to bring in about $245,000 so we can hire about three or four more FTEs to work on our making sure we inspect facilities as frequently as we should be. And in light of the fact that our inspections are more complicated these days, when Dr. Kassenborg comes up, she'll explain the complexities and the needs there better.
Okay. And Mr. Ernest, I guess we can hold off on the questions, but I'd have a question on that too. On are we as a state, are we falling behind on our obligations? That would be my question on obligations as far as inspections are concerned, but we can hold off on an answer for now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And then, Mr. Chairman, the last item on the general fund, which is also the first item on the ag fund, is moving the wholesale produce dealer's fee from the general fund into our agricultural fund. So it's now being deposited in the general fund, and we use a portion of our general fund appropriation for the plant protection division to accomplish this work. This would no longer have the money going into the general fund, would reduce our general fund appropriation by that amount to pay for it or make up for the lost revenue, and then have the revenue go into the ag fund and have it appropriated to us. And we feel that we could more accurately use the revenue for its purpose. It, by definition, it dedicates it, and then that's the only thing we'll be able to use it for.
Thank you.
Second item under the Agricultural Fund is an ACRA surcharge minimum. This is the Ag Chemical Response and Remediation account in our Agricultural Fund. So there's a surcharge to basically have money available in case spills need to be responded to. In 2009, we changed the way we charged this fee so that wholesalers weren't paying it, dealers were, so there are more smaller payments to us. Under the old system, under the current system, we have a $10 minimum, so if you owe less than $10, you don't have to pay it. But since we have more smaller amounts being paid to us, more of those payments would fall under this minimum. And the way it's collected and calculated, it would require refunds in a lot of those situations. Mr. Bozicki can explain the process better than I can, but this would simply get rid of the minimum and just make it fair across the board. You owe what you owe. It doesn't matter what it is. And it would save us a lot of bureaucratic extra work and would bring in about $2,000 a year. And then finally, the third item under the Ag Fund is a anhydrous ammonia inspection program. This would be a new program in statute to address the needs of the handling anhydrous ammonia in those facilities. And this would provide an incentive for facilities with documented compliance so they wouldn't have to be as inspected so often as facilities that are not found in compliance.
Okay, so, excuse me, Mr. Ernest, so the additional fee increase would only apply to the individuals who would fall out of compliance. Is that correct?
So Mr. Chairman, this would be a new fee that would apply to all facilities. However, the facilities that don't have any issues wouldn't have to be inspected as often.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I may, it's moving to a risk-based regulatory approach so that those facilities that are in compliance, doing a good job, will be inspected less frequently. It allows us to focus on those facilities that are not in compliance and that need to be brought into compliance. It allows us to focus more time on them, and also will give us an additional reinspection fee as a tool to use to incentivize people if we to comply with the law. And the reason we looked at this approach is because of the nature of anhydrous ammonia, where it's stored around the state now, and kind of looking at some of the incidents that have occurred in the last few years, wanting to really make sure that we bring everybody into compliance. So we can get into more detail later or now if you want, but
okay.
A little more on the thinking.
Okay,
Mr.
thank you. We will get into more detail later, but
yep.
We did have a number of questions that came up. So I'll just remind the members that we will address this in great depth as well, but I have Representative Paul Anderson first. Okay, he passes. Representative Bruce Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ernst, Ms. Gauthier, you said something about facilities that were not in compliance going after them. How many of them do we have presently in our system?
Representative Gauth.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think I'd like to have Mr. Greg Bozicki, who is the head of our Pesticide and Fertilizer Division, come down. He'll be able to supply you with that level of detail, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And Senator, or Representative.
Mr. Bozicki, welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. For the record, my name is Greg Bozicki. I'm the Director of Pesticide and Fertilizer Management at the Department of Agriculture.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, your question was, how many facilities do we have that store anhydrous ammonia? At the retail level, I believe the answer is 270, about 300. We also have some very large storage facilities. We don't have many of those. I think we have about a half a dozen. These are the huge tanks that are generally out in the countryside, like up at Barnesville and Starbuck.
Yeah. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Bozicki, the question was, how many of them are not in compliance?
Mr. Bozicki.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I can't give you an exact number because we actually do inspections on a rotating basis. We try to get out 3 to 5 years, but actually we're closer to 5 years. This fee initiative would allow us to do, as Ms. Gauthier said, what we would like to do is increase our rotations on inspections to those facilities that do not have a good compliance record. So we would increase that rotation, that time-wise. Basically, what I would say is about 30% of the facilities, I think, are in excellent shape with very minor violations. I would also say perhaps another 40% are in good shape, some improvement needed, but generally in good shape. And I would say that we do encounter about 30% where significant problems are demonstrated. Those are off the top of my head. I could get you some more data-based information based on our previous year's inspections, but I think that's a pretty fair, accurate estimate.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bozicki, so there's 30% approximately that haven't been come in compliance. Have they been shut down?
Mr. Chair, the way our inspection process works is when we go to a facility on a routine inspection, of which we do about 30 to 50 a year, if there are significant violations, those serious violations are issued basically a stop sale. They're frozen. They have to empty their tanks, whatever it is. We remove the risk when we're there. So in that regard, yes, those facilities are shut down, or that action or that operation is shut down. If we respond to an incident, when there's an incident, and we have about 50 anhydrous ammonia incidents each year, we have a 24/7 response process. We follow that up with an investigation to determine what caused that incident, and again, if there is a serious problem, that issue is addressed immediately on the spot. Whether it's emptying a tank, prohibition from use, we have storage tanks emptied if they're not in compliance, that kind of thing. So again, the issue is addressed immediately. Our concern is that what we would like to do is increase the number of inspections that we do so we can get to the more of these facilities quicker. Have we shut down a facility? The answer to that is no. We have not actually withdrawn a license, not in my tenure. Those situations may present themselves with some of the recent investigations that we've had to do.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as we have Mr. Bozicki at the stand, I would have passed, but as long as he's here, we'll pursue this a little bit further anyway. Mr. Bozicki, there's more than one agency that has jurisdiction in relation to anhydrous ammonia transportation, especially. Could you briefly describe that situation and also inform us as to whether your proposal will affect that cross-jurisdictional issue?
Mr. Bozicki.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson. Commonly, there's actually three state agencies and one federal agency that have a regulatory interest in anhydrous. There may be more depending upon the situation, like, for example, OSHA could be called in, but commonly we're dealing with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, which regulates it as a fertilizer. The Department of Transportation, which regulates transportation of hazardous substances under high-pressure vessels, commonly, and public safety. Perhaps I should just mention there's also, if the material is not being used as a fertilizer, it can be used as a refrigerant, and that is actually regulated by the Pollution Control Agency, although we work in cooperation with them and use each other's services on occasion. At the federal level, it is regulated largely by the federal Department of Transportation. In answer to your question, which I think stems from the fact that 2 years ago there was a series of investigations, inspections of anhydrous ammonia facilities conducted by the public safety, U.S. DOT, and state DOT to look at the status of these high-pressure vessels, which would include propane tanks, by the way. That resulted in a great deal of consternation by the industry. It resulted in several meetings with industry members and the agencies involved, and out of that, the industry thought it would be best, and there's actually three organizations that have members that store anhydrous ammonia, thought it would be best if we did a very intense educational effort of all the facility managers. And so with great cooperation, they got a lot of their memberships, and we held three workshops around the state. These were perhaps the best attended workshops I've ever attended. We had all the agencies at the panel. No one moved during the presentations, and as we broke up and went outside and we had our inspectors climbing all over nurse tanks, I did not see one of the facility managers or staff go to their pickup trucks and drive away. A few went to have some cigarettes, but you know, that's the way it is. In any event, since that time, 2 years ago, we've had increased compliance. We'd like to push that more with this initiative. As a result of that, there is, for example, a single checklist that all the agencies, state agencies, have signed off on, and that has been routed around to all the facility managers through their organizations and so forth. So I guess the bottom line is there certainly has been consternation. We know that. The agencies have been working together to try to minimize that. I won't say that everybody's issues are always answered, because the DOT, for example, does have reason to be very concerned about some of these tanks moving down the highway. We focus on facilities and nurse tanks when they come to our attention as deliverers of fertilizer material. So there still is plenty of room for additional work, but there has been some to this extent, and I anticipate that this initiative will cause even more coordination. Will all the jurisdictional boundaries be resolved by being a long-term state employee? I would say no, not ever, but we constantly strive to improve.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Buzicki. The fees that are generated, just can you describe in more detail where they're coming from?
Buzicki.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, currently there is a 30 cent per ton fee on all fertilizer. There's also an additional 10 cent per ton that goes into the cleanup fund. Those are the existing fees. There's a fee that members heard yesterday that is dedicated to research. That's the AFREC fee. So that's a total of 80 cents per ton on all fertilizer. What we're proposing, because of the nature of anhydrous and the issues that have presented, and we'll obviously go into this more when we get to the initiative, is a 75% surcharge on anhydrous ammonia. We call it a public safety surcharge, and that will add to our existing resources, but we will focus these $222,000 on increased attention to inspections. So increase our rotation or decrease our rotational time. We would like to move into rule writing. We would like to develop a rule that allows, as Ms. Gauthier captured, a process in which those facilities that have demonstrated high compliance are inspected less frequently, and those that need attention or have a poor compliance record are on a more frequent rotation. So we may get to some of the high compliance facilities, perhaps once every 4 or 5 years. The more problematic ones, perhaps 1 to 3 years. We don't have an exact proposal on that time. That would be developed through the rule writing process. And finally, we'd like to take a look at the existing rules, which have been in effect for some time. 70% of these facilities are located in or near or adjacent to the boundaries of cities. That makes them a higher risk situation. We'd like to inspect those more frequently. 30% of the facilities through consolidation and so forth have moved to greater Minnesota, or to a more rural area, so they're safer, and those tend to be less of a risk. So we'd like to develop a risk-based system to inspect. And then finally, as was mentioned, is we'd like to implement a $400 per inspection reinspection fee. Right now, we will go back to a facility once, twice, several times, that facility isn't paying for those services anymore, and we don't think that it's fair that the people who are in compliance should have to pay the whole bill for those facilities that are having problems with compliance. In this state, we sell about 375,000 to 275,000 to 300,000 tons of fertilizer. That's what the 75 cents would be applied to. Fertilizer is currently, well, sells for about anhydrous ammonia, I believe, about $600 to $700 per ton right now.
So, members, we are going to be asking Mr. Bezicki to come up here in the near future when we talk in more detail. So, is that all right, Representative Torkelson? So, Representative Anderson, did you have a question? All right, Representative
Thanks,
Anderson.
Mr. Chair, as long as we have you up here, just to follow up on Representative Torkelson's question, the change you're talking about, would that have anything to do with the frequency, for example, of how often the State Patrol comes on site at a co-op and inspects their rolling stock, the actual trailers? I have heard some consternation that that was quite often and very finite inspections of rolling stock just sitting in a parking lot. So would that affect what you're talking about here?
Mr. Bezicki.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, no, although we coordinate with the our sister agencies, this would not. There is one exception, though. We do have a program that we've really been trying to highlight with the industry, and that is the title actually escapes me right now, but it's a service status policy. Basically, what it is a dealer who has either a toolbar or a nurse tank that they know are out of compliance. They can tag that, and we will not inspect it. And the sister agencies, DOT and Public Safety, have agreed to honor that. So, if you had 30 nurse tanks at your facility, and seven of them you knew been a rough season, and you had to do some repair on it, you knew they weren't in compliance, you could put this tag on it, and everybody would let it go because we know you're not going to be using that. You've emptied it. You followed some minimal rules to ensure that it wouldn't be used, and it wouldn't be subject to inspection or any regulatory action. As a matter of fact, we're in the process right now of purchasing 5,000 heavy-duty magnets that don't fade in the sun. So not only can somebody tag it, but we're going to actually distribute these magnets to the facility so they can just slap that thing on and they get a buy.
Mr. Anderson?
Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right.
Thank you for letting me talk about the initiative early on in the process.
And you'll be coming back and talking about it more, I'm sure. So thank you. Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, so at this point, probably the best thing would be we're finished going through the 30,000-foot view, and we can go page by page, and that would get us to before that, however, on pages 6 and 7 is an overview of our entire agency budget, and then on 8 and 9 is an overview of the changes proposed in the governor's budget, and we'd be wanted to pause at this point, see if there were any questions or if you would like detail on this document.
Okay. Excuse me. Just members, in your folders here, in your binders, there is a tab for the governor's budget, and Ms. Gauthier is speaking to pages 6 and 8, if you see the contents page there. Pages 6 and 8 gives an overview of most of the stuff that we just reviewed, correct?
So, yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. So at this point in time, are there any additional questions about the 35,000-foot view from the governor's budget proposal? No.
Mr. Chairman.
Perhaps if Mr. Ernest could make just a few comments about it.
Please, Mr. Ernest.
Mr. Chairman, since these pages are a little confusing, I just wanted to point out a couple things, a few things on the pages. Excuse me. The top section of page 6 are our direct appropriations, so those are the numbers that appear in the bill. And I would just point out that they are amounts appropriated. On the summary sheet for the general fund, for example, I took into account the revenues, and your fiscal analyst will also show revenues when he tracks your spending for your committee. But the items that are have revenue and spending canceling each other out, on my sheet, the summary sheet, they showed canceling out, but expenditures are expenditures in the document. On the bottom part of page 7, though, appropriations on the top part and expenditures on the bottom part. And I just wanted to point out that the general fund direct appropriated number on the bottom part is different than it is on the top part. And the difference is because we have two appropriations that we transfer out. We do not spend the money. We transfer $186,000 each year to the Minnesota Grown account in the Ag Fund and then spend it out of that account. And we transfer $94,000 a year to MinSCU for their rural mental health programs, and they spend the money. So that's the difference between the top and bottom part of the pages here.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, it's just under the general fund at the top, the recommended is 62, 914, that second number. And then if you go down to the bottom, the other number he's referring to is the first number in the expenditures for the biennium, 62,354. So just showing you that the reason for that is those two pass-throughs for Minnesota Grown and to MinSCU for rural mental health initiatives.
Thank you for that.
You bet.
And also, Mr. Chairman, the top line under general fund, current appropriation, that is just flatlining the amount from fiscal 11 forward. It's not the same as the base. Okay. Our base reduction for our agency is 15%, considering the ethanol program reductions and the operating program reductions.
So, and that would be for this biennium?
For the coming biennium.
The coming biennium, yes. Thank you.
The remediation fund appears in two places on this page. That this is money that comes, that's managed by the Pollution Control Agency for polluted site cleanup, and our money is for ag chemical cleanup. We get a direct appropriation that appears in the bill of $388,000 a year. That number hasn't changed for quite a few years, and that's for our administration of the program. And then below, we have an open appropriation of $2 million a year for the actual cleanup work. That's an estimate of how much work we'll have for the biennium, and that's agreed to again with the Pollution Control Agency.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify again, this is Superfund money, state Superfund money that it goes for ag product spills that we clean up.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Also called MRLA.
Also called MRLA, Mr. Chairman.
And then just briefly, the other direct appropriated, we did have, excuse me, one year we had $2 million from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. That's another constitutionally dedicated tax source, and that was for emerald ash borer work. That was a one-time appropriation to us. It was spent over a couple years, but it was $2 million. And and then just briefly, the statutory appropriations, the Clean Water Revolving Fund, that actually is the money that's managed by the Public Facilities Authority. They get money from the federal government for the same thing that we do. We get our money for the Best Management Practices Loan Program, and then the federal law says that a portion of that should be given to this agency for ag-related clean water work, which is our Best Management Practices Loans. So that can be confusing with our Clean Water Fund, which is our constitutional money, the state's Clean Water Fund. Miscellaneous special revenue is cooperative agreements and conferences and trade shows, things like that, where we get money in just for a specific purpose to use during the year. Then the agricultural fund is our fee account, as we talked about. Federal, we have about $8 million a year. That's an estimate based on what the awards will be. And then Rural Finance Administration is for the loan program, and those numbers are shifting. We encumber money for loans, but then they kind of disappear from the budget. You have to look at a different report to get a better understanding what money goes where. But the main thing is the main money comes from bond funds to make those loans. And this is just a little bit for our administration. miscellaneous agency is money that we are an agent for. It's not our money. We're just holding it for someone else. And then gift money, we do get a few gifts from organizations to do work. And then I would just point out on page 7, it does summarize it again by program. So those numbers there tie out to the graph that the commissioner presented. $94 million is 55% for protection services and so on.
And where were you looking there, Mr. Ernest?
That's on page 7. It says expenditures by program.
Okay.
So we have protection services, $94,336,000 for the biennium.
Okay.
And that ties to the graph. That's 55% of our all funds budget.
Thank you. Excuse me, we do have a question. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ernst, you mentioned money that's transferred to the MNSCU for mental health. How long has that been in your jurisdiction to do that?
Mr. Ernst.
Mr. Chairman, we've had that for several bienniums, and I don't remember when it first started.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Ernst, do you know the essence of why it went to the Ag Committee to begin with?
Mr. Ernst.
Mr. Chairman, I think Commissioner Borbo might be able to better speak to the history of this program.
And Commissioner is coming up. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Jim Borbo, Deputy Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. The pass-through grants for MNSCU has been part of our agency, I know, for at least 10 years. And I think the thinking or the legislative intent was to pass through our agency rather than going through another entity that might charge some overhead costs. We don't charge any costs to do this. It's just a simple grant back to the MNSCU system again for crisis assistance or mental health services.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, on pages 8 and 9 then are another way to look at the governor's recommendations and changes. So that is a summary of, one more summary of the governor's recommendations. We don't have any special things to clarify on this, so unless there are questions, we'd be happy to move forward.
Are there any questions, members? Questions? Let's move forward then. Thank you.
All right. So, Mr. Chairman, that brings us to the programs that are funded by the Clean Water Fund, which, again, is from the Clean Water Land and Legacy Constitutional Amendment of 2008. And to talk about those programs come under the purview of Mr. Buzicki. He can answer questions. And I think we're on page 10 now of the governor's budget document. So in the budget document, there's a page, complete page, for each of these change items. And we can go through those, and I'll ask Mr. Buzicki to do that part of the presentation.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Buzicki, I think if you give us a brief overview on this, and if members have any questions, if they want clarification or any additional information, then we'll just call upon you at that time.
That would be fine. Mr. Chair, again, for the record, my name is Greg Buzicki, Department of Agriculture. On page 10 is the Agricultural Best Management Loan Program. This program is an existing program that the department has had in place for a number of years. Its purpose is to provide low-interest loans through banks and with the approval of the best management practices at a local level. The Clean Water Fund has been adding dollars to this for several years. In the last biennium, it was $4.5 million. The idea here is to these dollars are used specifically for those areas in which an impairment has been identified. So it's in cooperation with local authorities and lending institutions and in cooperation and focused on impairments. It is... very successful program that, and the program as a whole issues about 750 loans each year. And the idea is to grow the corpus to about $100 million, so there can be constantly about $20 million that go out. As it is a revolving fund, the money gets paid back into the fund and keeps getting recycled. On page 11 is the Clean Water Drinking Water Protection Program. Yesterday, Mr. Chair, you did hear from Mr. Bruce Montgomery. He talked about some of the projects there. This really focuses on the department's responsibilities to address nitrates and fertilizer nitrogen best management practices. Very much focuses on groundwater protection. In recent years, because of a lack of resources, we have had to confine our efforts to source water protection, that is, a wellhead protection around cities. We will still continue to focus on that, but we also are going to be doing such things as rewriting the fertilizer management plan and developing new best management practices with a wealth of cooperators. On page 12 is the pesticide monitoring and assessment initiative. Mr. Chair and members, the department has been monitoring pesticides in groundwater and surface water for many years, and as a result of the funding in the last biennium, we were able to purchase some very sophisticated equipment that will allow us to look at the part per trillion level and also be able to analyze, instead of 40 active ingredients, 100 active ingredients per each sample. So this greatly increases our capacity and brings it up to the level that the USGS has been using for a number of years. It allows the benefit to agriculture, that allows us to be able to look at these very low levels, but it allows us to look at contamination at levels that we have not been able to see before. Think of it having very sensitive canary in the coal mines. This continuation of the dollars supports staff in the in our laboratory services division, and as far as the Clean Water Fund it goes, we have a commitment to run an additional 600 samples per year, and we have met that commitment this past year and will continue to do so.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, on page 13 is our Clean Water Research Evaluation and Assistance Program. You did hear Dr. Adam Beer talk about this program yesterday. This is where we do support the Discovery Farms, which I know a lot of members have expressed interest in. We also do conduct very high-level research. As Adam talked about yesterday, the idea for this is to get some cutting-edge research out there to identify solutions. And perhaps one easy way to think of this is in what we call a conservation targeting or precision targeting of our conservation practices. The idea is if we can identify the very sensitive areas in, say, a reach of a river, that's where we would focus, that's where we would be able to identify that sensitive reach and focus our limited resources and provide the additional protection that that the environment and that the Clean Water Fund is designed to promote. And, Mr. Chair, this is also where we are using some of the dollars on the Root River Project. I know that's also a project that a number of members have expressed interest in. Actually, this would be one place where we would pick it up, but we would also be picking it up in some of the other areas that I previously mentioned, such as the monitoring, since we do some pesticide monitoring there. So, Mr. Chair, if you've got questions of the committee members, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Bozicki. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bozicki, reviewing the governor's recommendations and comparing them to the Clean Water Council's recommendations, Clean Water Council recommended the $500,000 for a research inventory database. Are you aware of that, and can you inform me as to why that was dropped from the proposed governor's proposed budget?
Mr. Bozicki.
Mr. Chair, I am aware of that, but I would have to actually go back and find out why that was dropped from the proposal. It is a proposal that was discussed about to develop this inventory database, and I apologize, I don't have the answer at the at the tip of my tongue, but I'd be happy to get it. I wasn't involved directly in those negotiations.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, and I appreciate that information. And we'll be talking about this afternoon at Heritage Committee. Mm-hmm. I hate to bring another committee into the Ag Committee, but I'm just trying to give these guys a little forewarning as to what might be happening later today. So thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson, you're a good man, you know, looking out for others, as always.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, I will see if I can get an answer to you forthwith.
So, thank you. Representative Anderson first, Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bozicki, if I could go back to page 10 for a second, you mentioned that loan program. You'd like to see about a $100 million revolving amount in that. How close are you to that, and what's the delinquency rate on some of the loans in that program? Do you have any figures on that?
Mr.
Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm going to have to call on Jim Borboom, the Deputy Commissioner. This program actually is run in another division. I can tell you that I believe there's $64 million in the corpus right now, and I'm not sure of the delinquency rate, and I'm going to let Jim answer those questions. I think he's a better authority.
So,
Mr. Chair, I guess we don't have that answer, but we'll be happy to go back and check and get that to
you can
get that to the committee.
Get to that.
The delinquency rate, yes.
All right. Very well. Thank you. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm on the same page, Mr. Bozicki, on the revolving loan program. You mentioned that there were about 750 loans per year distributed around the state of Minnesota. Can you tell me, how that distribution works around the state of Minnesota versus, you know, north, central, south? Can you give us some kind of data of how they're dispersed around the state?
Mr. Bozicki.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have that information. I'd be happy to get it for you. I do know that there is a much greater demand for application and for resources than we currently have. If I am not mistaken, that is quite widely disseminated, especially focused on agricultural areas. But I would point out that these loans are also available to homeowners and septic systems in rural areas as well, things like that, straight pipes, which have been an issue, and so forth. I don't know if we have any better answer at this time, but we'd be happy to get you the more information. Reports are done on this and submitted to the legislature. I would anticipate it's in that report.
Okay. Is that okay, Representative Ward? Okay. Wait on that. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bozicki, looking at, I'm on page 13, clean water. This proposed funding, just a question of geography, I guess. Is any of this involved with work on the Minnesota River? I know that it talks about those issues, and is any of that targeted to Minnesota River cleanup issues?
Mr. Bozicki.
Mr. Chair and Representative Purcell, I don't know that there's a each funding cycle there are 8 to 12 high-powered research proposals that get funded. I believe some of them directly have been conducted on the Minnesota River and certainly its tributaries. So there is a great deal of attention focused on that. The search for some of these answers and the solutions are not just located to that particular watershed it might be in. What the scientists are trying to do is really understand these solutions, pick up model watersheds or situations so they can expand to that. So even if some research wouldn't necessarily be in the Minnesota River, it may be appropriate to apply it to the Minnesota River. So the answer to your question is yes, directly there are, and I'd be happy to get the list of the projects and their locations if you'd be interested, but I'd also assure you that the way the department is approaching this, and with an advisory panel of agricultural experts from commodity groups and ag organizations, we try to get the biggest bang for the buck on this.
Representative Purcell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not trying to get too specific, but I know there was a significant legislative initiative to clean up the Minnesota River, and that was what my question revolves around. That initiative is still going on, and the last time we looked, we found out that we'd spent a lot of money and didn't have a whole lot to show for it, and that's what I was where I was headed with this. Are we trying to improve that situation? I assume we are.
Mr. Chair, I think you heard one of the testifiers yesterday, Representative Purcell, I think you heard one of the testifiers yesterday said this is perhaps one of the most exciting times of their employment at the state, because there's actually now dollars to go out and do this research and get solutions. So we take our responsibilities very seriously. Some of us have been working for a long time on this, and to have these resources so we can really target the research and the practices and get that information to Minnesota growers is tremendous. So the answer to that is I hope with these resources we're going to be able to make as much improvement with the cooperation of Minnesota growers as is possible.
Representative Purcell? Okay. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, until we get to our other initiatives, I don't have anything more on the clean water. I trust people have taken some notes on the questions we couldn't answer, and we'll get those answers back to the committee as quickly as possible.
Thank you for that. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, now moving into the governor's recommendations that affect the general fund, I would like to bring Mr. Ernest back. And for the first one, the bioenergy and agri-value added, or the ethanol, we did have a fourth sheet for you, which I'm sure most of you have looked at already, but gives you some specific detail on recent history with the ethanol program and what the governor is proposing to do. So I'd like to have ask you to please have that in front of you too, and that will be helpful, and I hope, in looking through this.
So members, just so you know, it's the one with the graphs here.
And the corresponding page, Mr. Chairman, in the budget would be page 14.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this one-page handout shows the recent history. Just for a recap, for people who might not remember, this program offered up to 10 years of payments, up to $3 million a year for qualified plants, 20 cents per gallon, that they produced during those 10 years. Not all plants started at the same time, so the program lasted longer than 10 years. But the program sunsetted at the end of fiscal year 10, so you can see $421,000 was the last. On the second row of numbers there, ethanol payments, $421,000 in fiscal year 10 was the last regular payment we made in the program. In fiscal years 2003, 4, 5, 6, and 7, because of limited appropriations, we paid about 13 cents. Most of the years it was exactly 13 cents per gallon. 2003 was a separate unallotment, and kept track of what they would have gotten for those other 7 cents. And then as money becomes available, we've started to make payments to make up those deficiencies. As I said in the brief summary, the 2012 year there would pay off all those remaining amounts. There are some limitations if a plant goes out of business. Obviously, they don't get it. They're in the statute provided for. If they're not producing on a commercial scale any longer, they don't get it, things like that. And then in fiscal year 2013, there would be $5 million left, and then we would start back into our agri programs, which are the livestock grants, the next-gen grants. We have grant-making authority and loan-making authority in the statute.
So, Mr. Ernest, I think the important thing to take home here is that the state, we will fulfill our obligations that we made to the ethanol industry. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And if you look at the first line on the general fund, the handout, 30,000-foot handout, you'll see that in fiscal 12, we are taking $296,000 from fiscal 13 in order to have enough money to pay off all that obligation in that first year.
Right.
Then in the second year of the biennium, you can see that there has been a reduction from the historic base, but that about $5.5 million would remain.
Right. Thank you. And members, what she's talking about there is on that, in the general fund, it'd be line 5 on the sheet as well. So thank you, Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to confuse you with numbers, but I said this was a 10% cut. It represents a 10% of our general fund. It's actually 30% for this program, because this is about a third of our general fund.
Right. Thank you.
Are there any other questions about that, Mr. Chairman? We'd be happy to answer them. Okay.
That was described very well. Thank you.
Thank you. The next item here is agency operating reductions, and I think Deputy Commissioner Borbaum will come up to discuss what we have done, but basically we have cut $1,016,000 per year from our agency base. Represents a 5% cut for a total of a little over $2 million for the biennium.
Okay. Commissioner.
Good morning again, Mr. Chairman, members. For the record, Jim Borbaum, Deputy Commissioner. The way that the agency would realize the savings under the governor's recommendation would essentially be to consolidate two divisions within the agency. The division called Agriculture Marketing Services would be one of those divisions. The second division would be Agriculture Development and Financial Assistance. The merger of these two divisions then into the new entity would be called Agriculture Marketing and Development. The consolidation of these two divisions within our agency essentially would allow us to vacate some office space on first floor. We pay a premium for the lease of our facility, and by vacating some office space and turning it back to the Department of Administration, we'd be able to realize about one-third of that $1 million savings. Part of that also would be some salary savings from one less division director. Another third of the $1,016,000 savings each year would come from early retirement. We had 24 employees within our agency that accepted early retirement this past year. Six out of those 24 employees are funded in part or totally by general fund monies, and six of those positions essentially are not going to be refilled. So we'll just have some salary savings there. That's about another one third. Then the remaining funds to get to the goal of $1,016,000 essentially is some cost savings that we've allocated back to the regulatory divisions within our agency. So, again, Mr. Chairman, members, that's how we were able to realize the savings.
Okay. Thank you. We have no questions.
Thank you.
We do. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Borbaum. Question, who owns the Department of Agriculture building currently, or how is its construction financed? And I'll let you answer that first, and I think okay. I'll follow up as well.
Mr. Borbaum.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, very good question. The building is actually owned by the St. Paul Port Authority. We've been in the building for 5 years, and there was about a two-year construction window. I believe the legislature at the time when they authorized the sale of bonds to build our laboratory services facility, it made a lot of sense to collate the office building with our lab services. And so the two buildings together, I believe the office building is like $70 million and the lab building is $60 million. So it just got to be a point of trying to manage the total size of the bonding bill. So ultimately, the building that we occupy as the office building is owned by the St. Paul Port Authority. We pay the Department of Administration an annual lease, which covers the debt service on the bonds as well as some operating and maintenance costs. So the building is owned by the St. Paul Port Authority. It's on a lease purchase agreement. At the end of 20 years, it would be owned by the state of Minnesota, but at present time, owned by the St. Paul Port Authority.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that clarification. Has there been any work to look at what the cost of that capital is, paying the St. Paul Port Authority versus paying essentially for what would be state-issued bonds for what we normally do for infrastructure purchases or asset purchases? Is there a comparison report? Is there in that lease to buy the ability to buy it out earlier if it makes financial sense because Department of Administration or Municipal Management Budget might recommend something like that?
Commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's a very good question, and I would have to defer that to, I'd probably go back to the Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget, Jim Showalter, to map out what you're asking for. I think that's an excellent point. I have verbally raised that, and the verbal response I've gotten is that there is no savings or benefit to refinancing, but again, I think the point is that seeing that mapped out would be a good idea. So I will follow up on that.
Carry on.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to point out for those of your members who may not have, I know we had talked earlier this session about having a tour of our facility, but just to point out that we are co-located with the Minnesota Department of Health, and we share a large portion of our laboratory equipment with them. And that was intentionally done as a way, Mr. Chairman, to use that equipment as effectively with the highest bang for the buck, if you will. And it's working out very well. We don't share all of our equipment, but we share a lot of the very most expensive pieces, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Before Mr. Borboom leaves the stage, is there a percentage of the building that's currently unoccupied, and will that unoccupied portion increase in percentage as a result of this current budget?
Mr. Boer.
Proposal.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, I'd have to probably talk to Steve Ernest to find out. We do have, at the present time, some clusters of vacant space or unused office space, and quite honestly, we intentionally planned that. We moved into the building because we didn't want to move in and not have any opportunity for growth, but actually we have shrunk in size. When we first began the planning of the building, I think we were at about 500 and or just over 500 employees, and right now we're down to 420 employees. But out of those 420, we have 150 employees that live and work in Greater Minnesota. There are food, feed, meat, and dairy inspectors. So this merger or consolidation will actually allow us to better utilize the existing floor space, vacate probably one of the better real estate parcels in our building that's on the first floor level, and hopefully turn that over to someone else to cover that cost.
Ms. Torkelson. Representative Swazinski.
Mr. Chair, we're talking a little bit about the consolidation and that. Is the governor planning on doing any reorganization as far as the agency's concerned? And obviously there's going to be some consolidation work. And how else are you looking to kind of reorganize things over there? And if there is, you know, what kind of timelines are you guys looking at?
Mr. Borboom. Or...
Well, yeah, yeah.
Or Commissioner Fredrickson.
I probably should
Deputy Commissioner Borboom. We'll go to the big guy. Commissioner Fredrickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for the question. At this point in time, no, we felt that we have met our obligation in terms of reduction as we went through the budget process. Our recommendations were accepted by the governor, and we're planning to move forward from that perspective. So, no, I don't see any other real opportunities for structural change within the department.
Mr. Chairman, just to add, you know, that's within the Department of Agriculture. We have a general fund decrease of 15%.
Representative Swazinski, follow up? All right. Thank you, Commissioner.
Again, Mr. Chairman, Representative, that'd be up to you at the end of the day.
Point well taken. Thank you. Ms. Gauthier.
If there are no other questions about the agency operating reductions, Mr. Chairman, then we'd like to move on. The next item is our retailer food fee, handler fee increase. And for this item, I'm going to bring up the director of our dairy and food inspection division. Go ahead.
Please state your name for the record.
Dr. Heidi Kassenberg, sorry.
For the record, my name is Dr. Heidi Kassenberg. I'm the division director of the dairy and food division at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Welcome.
So this portion of our presentation will, I'm going to present our proposal to increase retail food handler fees. And so as a little bit of background, retail food means grocery store food, grocery store convenience stores. It's important to know a little bit of background about our statutory authority. Just briefly, we have statutory authority from farms, a certain portion of farms, all the way up to the retail level. And so that means food processing, transport, storage, up to really the grocery store. And then after that, it goes to health, the health department, and they do restaurant and food service inspections. Okay. Why do we need to have an increase of 15% to these fees? Well, we are currently behind in our inspections. We are delinquent on our inspections, 40 to 45% delinquent on what we consider to be our high-risk facilities. These are facilities where food that is ready to eat is produced. A good example of that are delis within grocery stores. And so those that have a high risk of transmitting foodborne disease and foodborne illness. We have not raised fees since 2003, and so it's been quite a few years. And it's important to note that our fees are considerably lower in many instances than comparable agencies within the local government and also state government, looking at our comparable agency of health. There's about, when I say our authority goes up to the retail level, there is a little segment of that that is actually delegated to cities and local health departments. There's 9 of those delegations. Those were delegated in 2000, and that's just for retail, for grocery stores and convenience stores. And we are significantly lower in our inspection fees than those other agencies.
Okay, excuse me, Dr. Gassenberg, we do have a question. Representative Anderson, Bruce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yeah, I'll vote you real quick.
Well, here. You never know. You know, it's early in session. Huh?
We'll knock them off fast. We'll get down to the bottom here. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Katzenberg, talking about inspections, I was told by a constituent of mine who is outside of the state of Minnesota but has a friend who works in state government that the inspection of delis, this was the example he gave me, is inspected by both the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health. They inspect the same area within the grocery store, and yet they come back with 2 different reports. And when you mentioned something about raising the fees on that, to me, when I heard that, I thought, well, why can't one department, one area in government, whether it's the Ag Department or the Health Department, if they're going into the same area, doing the same area within the grocery store to be inspected, why can't that be effectively done without having to have 2 inspection areas doing the same, basically the same thing, only coming up with 2 different reports, but easily could have been consolidated?
Dr. Kassenberg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, in general, those types of situations don't happen. I'm not saying that they don't ever happen, but we have the way we split with health is the predominance of business. So if it's predominantly, like say there's a restaurant that has a deli associated with it. If it's predominantly money from a restaurant, then it goes to health. If it's predominantly from production or the deli part, then it's for the Department of Agriculture. So I'm not sure specifically what that person was talking about, that in generally that's an anomaly. We have a pretty good working relationship with both our state and local counterparts, and in general they don't have double inspections, if you will. Now, in the past that did happen, and that's one of the reasons for delegation originally, because there was a little bit of overlap, but now in general that doesn't happen very frequently. And I'd be interested to know which particular facility that happens in.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Dr. Katzenberg. Well, it happened just back in September. Yeah. And so it's not, if you've done away with this, it hasn't been done away with, or somebody has not followed through with the delegation or the response from the higher ups to say stop doing this, because it's still going on.
Dr. Katzenberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'd be interested to speak with you later to find out and get to the bottom of that.
All right. Representative Anderson?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Kassenberg, looking at the rationale on this page, it says you're inspecting 5,200 retail food facilities, 800 food manufacturing facilities, 740 wholesale food facilities, and 850 mobile food vehicles. Do they all pay the same rate for that inspection?
Dr. Kassenberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the fees are determined by gross annual sales. And that's gross annual sales just of the food portion. So like a gas station, of course, would probably in general has a higher gross from gas sales, but it only be on the food portion. So that's we have several different categories for that, starting at the lowest, I believe, $77. I think the mobile units are a little bit less than that, on up to a couple thousand dollars for larger facilities.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A little different avenue here. Retail on the farm facilities, would they also be subject to this inspection? And, you know, if they're a dairy store or an apple orchard or something like that, would they pay a certain scale, a fee on that as well?
Dr. Kassenberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it depends on... if it's all product of their farm or garden, then they do not have to have a license, but they still need to be inspected. So any other, if they're selling food that's not of their farm or garden, or they prepare food that with other ingredients, like say they're making ice cream, for instance, and they bring in sugar, then it's considered not part of the farm or garden. So if they're conducting a retail facility, and mostly a lot of times they are selling products beyond their farm or garden, mm-hmm. then they would be subject to that particular retail license fee.
Okay. Representative Szymanski. Okay. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Kassenberg, thank you. I'm looking at the second paragraph under the rationale section, and I think it's probably implicit, but I want to be clear. With the fee increase, what do you anticipate will happen with the 45%, whether you call it a bat load or the 45% figure? Will that be brought down to zero? Do you have a period of time when you hope to be caught up if the fee increase does occur?
Dr. Kassenberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a great question, and we hope to decrease that portion that we're delinquent, but one of the things why we needed an increase, not only because of the increasing numbers that we're delinquent on, but also the increasing complexity of our inspections. The food industry has really changed markedly, and the amount of knowledge and expertise that our food inspectors are required to know, plus the length of inspection times as we find more and more avenues for contamination and new things. I mean, look at the peanut butter outbreak, for instance. Who knew that peanut butter would be a cause for salmonella? And then also we're looking more closely at delis, looking at listeria contaminations. And in some cases, we've been able to help companies. We've discovered listeria issues within their facilities before illness has occurred, and we've been able to change their operations, or they've taken that information and changed their operations. And some large companies within Minnesota have been able to do that. So we hope to decrease that delinquency. We hope to get it down to zero, but I can't predict the future on that.
Dr. Kassenberg, it's a very good question that Representative Morrow brings up. You know, our fear here is if we increase the inspection fees, or increase the fees, then 2 years from now we're back here saying we're still 45% delinquent, and so it is a concern, right? It is a concern. We have Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Dr. Kassenberg. I was wondering, as we were talking earlier with anhydrous inspections about risk-based inspections, I was wondering if you do that, given the fact that there hasn't been enough to do the inspections with the frequency that you'd like, if you've been focusing more on the problem facilities, or if you could give me some information on that.
Yes, Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Representative Eakin, you know, initially when we looked at this issue, the department did come up with a risk-based system. And when the governor looked at it, he determined that he felt that it would have been not as good of an idea for some of the smaller companies out there, and felt that a better way to go was just straight across the board nobody pays more than a 15% increase, and we did in fact run the numbers, and nobody would pay more than 15% increase. The reason being is that, you know, even an increase, how did I believe the governor put it, that once his grandfather's property tax went up by $10 from $90 to $100, and he never did get over that 10% increase. So it's, we want to be cognizant of people out there trying to run a business and not wanting to give a huge dollar increase.
Representative Eakin.
And thank you for that answer. I was wondering, however, about the frequency of the inspections themselves. Yep. If the frequency will increase if facilities are determined to be problem facilities, are there going to be more frequent inspections being done? And if currently, if that's being done, and if because of the lack of inspectors, there's been a focus on the problem facilities more.
Dr. Kassenberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative, by statute and also in the food code that FDA, model food code that FDA has, high-risk facilities are inspected once a year, medium 18 months, and low-risk facilities every 2 years. And so as we're getting to know more and more about these things, and that's one of the things in the Federal Food Safety Modernization Act is also to increase the inspection frequencies by our federal counterparts.
Representative Eakin, right. Please proceed.
And so, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I touched a little bit about the complexity of our food supply and the increasing really demands on our times, on our time for our food inspectors as well as our compliance staff and others. And so so we're really looking not just at, you know, floors, walls, and ceilings is what it used to be. It used to be looking at just the cleanliness of the facility. What we're looking at now is really the system of, does a facility have a system in place to ensure that they're producing food, safe food? And so what we look at is their system. Is it adequate? Are they following it? And then if there are problems, because there's always going to be problems, do they have a way to get it back and what we call do corrective actions, and are they employing those corrective actions? So we're really looking at it, we're looking at the facility so that when we're not there, are they capable of producing safe food? So we're really moving towards that, and that takes a different skill set and a different mindset than traditionally of looking, you know, are the floors, walls, and ceilings clean?
And Dr. Kassenberg, thank you for that. You hear a lot of testimony back in our district, whether it's we're talking about food or nursing home inspections or whatever the case may be, that sometimes we have a tendency of having a, what's perceived as a gotcha mentality, where the inspectors are coming in and gotcha on this, gotcha on that, versus coming in and actually helping them to address the issue and plan for it long term. So thank you for that as well. So please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there's another resource that you may be interested in. There's a video, a DVD that we have, and also it's been posted on our, it's on our website and also on our YouTube site, our MDA YouTube site, that really goes through a day in the life of an inspector, and it highlights what our inspectors do, what they look for, how they work with companies to educate them first, and then move them towards compliance. Oftentimes we're, especially for the small and medium-sized companies, we're one of the only or one of the few representatives of food safety that these companies have, because they don't have the resources for quality assurance. So, and particularly those companies that are small, medium, and then they're going the next step and they're growing, which is a good thing, but with that comes some growing pains and also the bigger risk for potentially infecting a large number of individuals. So really this is also a protection, if you will, for companies, because no one wants to eat unsafe food, and that can adversely affect not only the public's health, but also the health, economic health of companies, and also commodities that are rightly or wrongly implicated. We saw that with the tomato / jalapeno outbreak a few years ago, where tomatoes were unfortunately branded as the culprit in a salmonella outbreak, when it ultimately turned out to be the jalapeno pepper. So if we can avoid these problems, get on them quickly, then hopefully we can avoid those.
And Dr. Kassenberg, I mean, you are a part of the agriculture department's mission. You know, it's to uphold the integrity of the food supply. So you provide a very important service, you and the people that you represent. So I thank you for that as well.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the other part, what are we going to do with this funding? Well, portions of this funding will go towards hiring inspectors and also for our laboratory support. Without our laboratory, we would be greatly hamstrung if we didn't have our laboratory. Our laboratory is crucial in not only preventing illnesses, but also finding out the cause of those illnesses. That peanut butter outbreak that happened a few years ago probably wouldn't have been solved without our laboratory. And I honestly believe that we were able to avert serious illness, if not death, because they were able to isolate that salmonella out of that peanut butter product. Because it was a very vulnerable population that was consuming this product. People in hospitals, people in nursing homes.
Thank you. So,
any further questions, Mr. Chairman?
Any further questions, members? And Dr. Kassenberg, if I can just reiterate what Representative Morrow said, if this does become law and the fees are increased, that we do, it would be our goal as well to reduce the percentage of deficiencies. So, all right. Thank you so much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next item in the general fund recommendations for reduction by the governor is this wholesale produce dealers fee dedication. And I'm going to ask Mr. Geer Friso, who is the head of our plant protection division, to come up and speak to this. And again, what this really is a move from the general fund to the ag fund so that the totality of the fee revenue can be dedicated back to the intention designated by statute.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Yeah, for the record, my name is Geer Friso. I'm the director of the Plant Protection Division. And I'll be fairly brief. I think this is a fairly simple change item. The Wholesale Produce Dealers Program is a way to protect producers, farm marketers, and cooperatives who are selling to wholesalers, and what it does is create a bonding system that protects those sellers. Currently, we have one full-time person that runs the program and a little bit of clerical support. We are appropriated about $80,000 a year from the general funds to run the program, which really doesn't quite cover our costs. The program generates about $120,000 in fees, and so we are simply asking for the ability to utilize the full fees to run the program and then make adjustments accordingly.
Okay. Any questions, members? The testifier. So, very well done, Mr. Friso. Thank you.
I like to be short.
Mr. Chairman, short and sweet. Yes.
Yes, that's right.
The next item here under our agricultural fund in the governor's recommendations is the ACRA surcharge minimum elimination. And once again, ACRA is our pesticide fee.
Yes.
So to speak to the details of this, I'm bringing back Mr. Buzicki.
Mr. Buzicki.
Mr. Chair, again, Greg Buzicki, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chair, members, a couple of years ago, we did a very significant change to our pesticide fee collection. Pesticides are registered in the state. Prior to the change, it was the seller's responsibility to report back to the registrant. So think of a co-op reporting back to a registrant like Monsanto, and then Monsanto, by law, was responsible for reporting to us what their sales were in the state and then paying us a percentage of that called an annual gross sales, and that was part of their registration fee. We came to the legislature, the industry, the public, and basically said we needed a fee increase. We had one for 19 years. That was agreed to, and as part of that, we were also asked by the industry to fix a problem in how the fees are paid. And rather than having the fees being paid by the Monsantos of the world, they would still pay a certain registration fee. The annual gross sales would be, we cut out the middleman. Basically, the dealers would report to us directly. part of that was to provide a level playing field, because there was a fear, a concern by the industry that internet sales and cross-border sales, people weren't preparing their fair share. So we fixed that. One of the things we forgot to fix, or we overlooked, was this ACRA surcharge. The ACRA program is a cleanup program that we've been operating for a number of years. It provides, think of it as an insurance to those folks who have a spill or a contamination. In any event, originally we basically said if a registrant, not all of them are Monsanto, some of them are smaller and they've got smaller products, smaller volumes of sales, if they owed us a check of less than $10, we didn't want it. It costs us money to process that and so forth. So basically you were waived the fee if it was less than $10. However, now with instead of a few people paying big dollars to us, we have a lot of people paying small dollars to us. So very simply, what we would have to do is add all of that stuff up, find out if one product owed us less than $10, and if so, then we would have to provide reimbursement to all these small businesses in Minnesota. It would be a hassle for them. It would be very costly for us. So the intent was to do away with paperwork and bureaucracy, and by omitting this change, we actually are technically increasing it. So what we would like to do is just eliminate that $10. Everybody pays what they owe, and that would be simple for not only us but the industry as well. We estimate that it will bring in about an additional $2,000 in revenue. That's all that was actually waived in the past. So that's about as simple as I can make it. I see some questions from some of the members. I'd be happy to try to answer those or provide more detail later individually if you'd like, however you'd like to proceed.
No questions.
All right, excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're just going to move right on then to the anhydrous ammonia inspection program, Mr. Chairman.
And just a reminder, we have about 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And, Mr. Chair, the anhydrous ammonia initiative is found on page 19. I think I largely covered this issue earlier. You can see the bullets at the top of the page, which actually is a list of what we're proposing to do. It's a succinct list in which we talk about the rule changes, the reinspection fee, the fee increase, and the increase in inspections. I don't know if there's any additional questions or if you'd like me to go into more detail at this time. I would anticipate that we actually have perhaps a hearing about this later.
There's no further questions right now. You did a good job earlier covering this, and I see that Representative Torkelson left the room. So, joke there.
We will be providing more information via fact sheet, and we're always available to answer questions. So, Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me, Representative Anderson.
Thanks. One quick question, Mr. Chairman. One of the bullet points on page 19 is authorizing an annual anhydrous ammonia public safety surcharge. Is that something new, an additional fee or tax?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, that is the fee increase. That is 75 cents per ton that we are asking. That would be the fee that would bring in the additional $220,000 that would allow us to hire more inspectors and go through the increase in the inspection process and the rule writing process. So, yes, it is that fee increase that is subject of our initiative.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, those inspectors would also allow us to, pardon me, focus more attention on the people that need to come into compliance and help them get into compliance.
Representative Anderson? Okay. Thank you. So, Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, at this point, we are done with our overview and detail on the governor's recommendations. So it's up to you whether you would like us to continue through this budget. We do. The next part of it would be to go through our division by division, explaining the spreadsheets and that sort of thing, and we can certainly start that and probably get a little ways into Mr. Buzicki's, or we can start tomorrow with that.
Well, we have about 7 minutes. Would it pay to get started, do you think, Mr. Buzicki, or what's your thoughts? Like some feedback.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to get started. It does take some time. We do have a significant range in responsibilities, whatever the chair would like.
I think what we're going to do is we're going to hold off for now, okay? Okay. We're going to hold off for now. We've covered quite a bit. People are getting...
That's a lot, Mr. Chairman. So we'll start here tomorrow, Mr. Chairman.
Let's start here tomorrow, okay?
Sounds good.
And I thank you so much.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, like we said, we'll pick this up tomorrow, same time, same place. And with that, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.